to the Dance School Startup Mini Podcast, bringing you bite-sized advice each week to help you at the start of your dance school's journey. My name's Laura Gillam, and I've been a dance teacher for over 20 years and a school owner for over 14 years. I'm so excited to support you on your journey, and I look forward to getting to know you more in the Dance School Startup Facebook group.
Happy Friday. It's Laura here over at Dance School Startup. I hope you're all well and you've had a productive week. I'm here today with another coffee interview, and this week I am with the wonderful Rosina Andrews, author of Pirouette Surgery, Leap Surgery, founder of the Rosina Andrews Method, and all-round nice girl. Hello, my love. How are you?
Hi, Laura. How are you? I'm good, thank you.
I'm so pleased to have you.
I do love a coffee podcast. I do love a chat.
I've got my cuppa here. I'm ready to go. So I've got some questions for you today that I know that everyone will be really keen to see your thought process on. So let's just jump in. And the first thing I want to talk to you about is how training children has changed since you started out, you know, not just you started out teaching, but just started out as a student yourself, because it has really changed over the years.
Hasn't it just? When I looked at this question that you were going to ask me, I was like, oh, I wonder if she means from when I started or when I started teaching. So I kind of got answers for both. Obviously, back in the 90s, I did modern and tap and ballet, and I had a great time twice a week, I think, and that was a lot, you know. And, you know, that was kind of all I did. And, you know, maybe I got to do like some national at a weekend event, but I never got to do as many styles as there are now for kids. That was definitely, so I remember starting like free jazz when I was 14 and doing a dance to Usher and thinking I was just literally legit commercial, and I am not a commercial dancer, end of. So that's kind of like, that was how my opinion of, like, I just didn't do as much. No way did I do as much as these kids are doing now. And then since I started teaching, so I've been teaching nearly 10 years now, the level of what the kids are trying is so much more difficult than I think it was 10 years ago. Like, kids are now, you know, an aerial cartwheel is a staple now, whereas before it was like, oh my God, she can do an aerial. And then you go to a group of kids and you go, how many of you can aerial? And like, all of them put their hand up. And you're like, oh, okay. And I think that has definitely changed. But the other thing that I think has changed for the bad is every kid is now training to be elite. And not every kid needs to be elite. Like, you don't have to get an A star in every subject. Like, some kids just want to come to dance and have fun and enjoy the music and perform. But they don't need to be training 20 hours a week if that's the reason they're coming. So I think, for me, the ability to do more, you know, with the conditioning, with the acro, with the this, with the that, every kid is trying to be elite, and I don't think they need to be. So that's kind of my two changes. And also now everything is so much more influenced by social media. I remember when I went to New York, this was 2011, Dance Moms was just getting over here. And I know people moan about Dance Moms, but I honestly have so much, I think it's so important that kids saw that. Because Maddie Ziegler can do the splits. So every kid now practices to do the splits because Maddie can. And yeah, okay, the choreography is not great. And no, the dance moms are hardly what we want our dance moms to watch. But at the end of the day, the kid watching it, I don't think there's any problem. Oh, she did three turns. Oh, I'm going to practice my three turns. I think it's a great influence for them. But Dance Moms was only just getting over here. And we were in America and it was obviously already there. And they'd already were moving like that. And then I noticed when I came back, people were starting to add their hour seconds to the routines, and the costumes were beginning to be more like Dance Moms and things like that. So I think definitely more influenced by social media now. In fact, I don't know if it's a good way, a bad way.
Well, it's funny you should say Dance Moms, because I remember years ago when you first came to my school to do pirouette surgery, and you said to my kids then, you are the last generation who didn't grow up with Dance Moms. You're the last not.
Yeah, I remember your seniors and saying that to them. Because even the younger ones were beginning.
Absolutely. And I remember that. And it was really funny because I was talking to my husband about the fact that I was going to be talking to you today. And he brought that up. And he said, I remember her saying that to your seniors. Yeah. And it was just such a moment. And we didn't realise at the time what an actual statement that was. But it is.
Yeah, it is. And I think, honestly, it's like, you know, people are saying, you know, so my assistant Rory is 19. So he has never lived without internet and phone and Google and this and that. And I think whilst we're like, oh, you know, Gen Z, they've never lived without, we have to think that in dance too. And I think some teachers forget that we have to move with the times. Like, oh, it was better when the world didn't have social media. Yeah, but the world has social media now, so you have to learn to live with it and you have to learn to evolve with it. It's like, oh, it was better in my day when, I don't know, coffee was from a tree. You know, everyone's like, coffee is from a tree. Is coffee from a tree? I don't know, a bush? Anyway, it's like, it's always better in hindsight, but you have to, can't be like, oh, well, you know what? I don't want my students to use social media. My studio is not going to have social media. I don't want them looking at anything. I don't want them watching YouTube. I don't want them practicing. They'll just go to somewhere else because kids will follow trends. So I think social media is an influence, and I think it's very much influenced. Not that we've been to any competitions recently, but I'm pretty sure when we get back, there's going to be numerous versions of what has been seen on the internet. That's a whole nother story and another chat, that one, Laura, I think.
So what about the way that we are training them now? So we are, I would say that most studios are following a syllabus, I would say. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, most studios do follow a syllabus, whether it be ballet, modern and tap, or just ballet, or just modern, or things like that. And I think this is beginning to change. Again, if you're wanting your school or your students to be able to do all the things they desire to do, sadly, their modern syllabus of any of them isn't going to lead them to that. I'm not saying it's not a good, you know, a good addition. Like they need the basis, they need the discipline, they need some kids do strive from working towards exams, but it isn't going to lead them there. So I think a lot of schools now are beginning to add supplements into their timetable, but sadly that's making the timetable busier. Kids are now training 4 hours a night and they're absolutely shattered. And I think sometimes it's not, obviously my hashtag is dance smarter, and I don't necessarily think they need all of that. Kind of the way my mother's studio, they do exams, but they teach, the plan is in their faculty's mind, they teach them to dance for 2 terms and then they learn the syllabus and do the exam. So it's not they've learned the syllabus and then we try and get them to do a showpiece. It's like we teach them to dance, we teach them to move, use the floor, use their abs, use their this, use their arms, all that. And then go, okay, so now we're going to do an exam. Here's the exercise. And they know they can do it because they've already learned all the staples. So that's, I think there is a place for it, but
why I'm asking is because there's a lot of chat in the group at the moment from people that are just starting to work out their timetable, and there are regularly people asking me, you know, do you think exams are important? And so it was interesting just to get your perspective on it, because I agree. I think exams are important to a point, but it's not the be all and end all. And if running examinations in your dance school isn't something that you feel is important, you shouldn't feel like follow everybody else and follow the trend, because there are other ways of implementing stuff into your dance school.
I've seen a lot in lockdown, a lot of schools that do syllabus seem to lose a lot of students. Because it's like, if I was 15 and in lockdown, the last thing I'd want to do was grade 5 modern on Zoom every Tuesday. Like, yeah, maybe I love grade 5 modern when I go to the studio because my friends are there, and actually it's more fun when you're doing the traveling steps across the room. And if your teacher is good enough to be able to teach you grade 5 modern, but actually supplement a lot of other cool stuff in, you're having the best time. But on Zoom, the same exercise over and over again. I mean, I don't teach syllabus at all. I teach in studios where I'm definitely the free work teacher, the freelance. Most of the studios I teach at do syllabus as well. But I find that even people are like, oh, surely your leaps and turns classes follow a set. And I'm like, no, because I think children learn better when it's constantly changing. Yeah, okay, if we're working on side leaps in my head this term, we'll do a side leap somehow. But I'm not going to do the same exercise over and over again, because they don't. In the long term, we're trying to make dancers that can do all different things, all different ways, and use their bodies, not an arm exercise or a kick exercise, which is what it becomes when they only do syllabus. So yeah, I think it's a mix, and people are always really shocked when my mum's examiner, that I'm like, oh, I don't do exams.
But at the end of the day, it's not the be all and end all, and I think it's nice for someone to confirm that.
And some of the best schools in the country, like a lot of people always... You know, Vail is one of the best schools in the country, and Emily is a good friend of mine, and they do exams, and they do it absolutely beautifully, but that's not all they do. Because if you just do that, you don't look like that. You can't get as good as that doing that. You've got to do everything. But then obviously there's the rec kids that don't want to do everything. And realistically, I think if you come to dancing as a recreational kid, exams is not what you want. You want to dance to the latest music. You want to do commercial or hip hop or things like that. It's not, okay, so hi, I'm 12 and I want to start dance. Okay, come and learn breathe and release. They don't get it. So I think maybe if you're training from little up, absolutely start the exams, because it gives you a point, and also something for the kids to work for, especially when they're younger. Having something for the parents to practice with them at home is always useful. But then the older kids, especially if you're gathering newbies, you don't want to put them off by shoving them into a modern class, I don't think. Okay. But ballet exams, I think ballet exams are good because, well, ballet is ballet.
Yeah, and no, I agree. Of all of them, I think the ballet is the one that I really enjoy using the syllabus for. But
yeah, I don't think it needs free work. Well, it needs free work, but ballet doesn't evolve when America decides to start doing modern dance all quirky. Ballet stays ballet. Whereas modern needs to evolve, unless, or else you're going to come across international students who are going to be better.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. No, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. I appreciate your opinion. And look, with all the schools that you've visited over the years, and it is probably hundreds.
I mean, it was like, I think 179 just in lockdown.
I can imagine. I mean, I'd love to know if you could share anything that you find just really seems to help build a successful school.
I think there's one clear answer for this one for me. The schools that I most enjoy going to and that seem to have the most consistent success. When I say success, it's not even like winning or high exam results, but consistent success as an environment that kids want to be in, constantly a new flow of little ones coming in and things like that. The schools where it is a family environment, not necessarily run by a family, but the little ones know who the big ones are and the big ones know who the little ones are, and their middle age kids know that they want to be as good as them. They're the schools that I think have the best. And they're the ones that when you say, how long have you been dancing? And they go, oh, I came here when I was 3. They're the schools I love. The ones that, you know, and I think that's very similar to where I grew up. Studio hopping wasn't really maybe it was a thing back then, but I don't think so. You went to a dance school. If you enjoyed it, you stuck at it and you left when you were 18, whether you were going to dance or not. So they're the ones I love. I mean, there's obviously other schools where that doesn't happen. And if you're a new school, if you've just taken over, then you're not going to have that range. But they're the ones that I think everyone should aim to be.
I'm so glad you said that, because we literally had a conversation about that really recently, actually, because one of my things that I think is really important is what you just touched on, is that the children that are younger know the older children.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it makes such a big difference to the culture of your school if everybody is feeling comfortable in each other's presence.
Absolutely. So, and I think lockdown has actually affected this slightly. I don't know about you, but we had to split into capsules. So now the 10 to 11 year olds are all together. So if you're the best 11 year old, you're now, oh, I'm the best 11 year old. Look at me, I'm the best. And then in 2 weeks' time, we're about to go, let's all go together. And that 11-year-old who was the best is like, oh, wait, there's a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 9-year-old. There's kids like that. And I think, yeah, that is it. You get that, like, edge if they're the best in their own bit but don't see the big picture. Yeah.
And out of
interest, it's nice for them to have buddies, like, go to a competition, watch the seniors and watch the little ones. I think that's their dance family that they love.
And sort of going on with that, do you think it's a good thing, because we've been talking about assistant teachers, and I'm a big fan of assistant teachers in the class. Is that something that you would recommend that our listeners incorporate into their business?
I think if your assistant teacher, whether it be helping primary ballet, helping grade one modern, helping at the desk, needs to know exactly how you run your school, needs to have grown up with what you want. Otherwise, you're going to have a slight clash of interest. And okay, they're children or teenagers. You're not going to have the same clash as if you had a faculty member that didn't agree with what you liked. But those kids, and I think I know that, again, I keep referring to my mum's school because I don't have a dance school, but those kids, when they get to like 13, 14, and they're asked, did you want to help with grade one tap? and they're like, oh my God, my life is complete. And they have the best time. And you don't really, sometimes you think, you're not doing anything, but they're there. They want to be there from 4 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night. They don't want to be at home. They don't want to be at school. They want to be at their dance family. And the only way you can get that is if they grow up and believe everything you do. And I'm all about trusting the program. And if your students trust you and you trust your students, that's a really important part of it. If you don't trust them, there's no point even beginning. That's when you get the dreams. The dreams will happen when everyone starts trusting each other. So yeah, I love a student teacher. I tell you what I don't like is famous choreographers using assistants that they have never trained prior to actually ever seeing them before the workshop they're about to demonstrate for, and then saying, oh my God, look at my method, look how great my training is. And you're like, no, that training is definitely someone else. But that's, again, another story. Yeah. Like, my assistant is, I've trained him since he was, I don't know, 12, when he came out of Matilda. And yeah, I could definitely pick other people from around the country who are perhaps more leggy and more like, oh, look, she can do a really cool backbend. But I didn't train them, and I'm not going to take responsibility for that. So yeah, class assistants, yes. Workshop demonstrators, questionable.
And so that leads me on then. So what would be the one thing that, if you were going to open a school tomorrow,
only one,
you could only choose one thing, what would it be that you personally would avoid if you were to open your own school?
That's not fair. Only one. Can I do one business one and one teaching one?
You may. I will allow.
Okay, cool. So my business one, if I opened a school tomorrow, I would only be advertising for the younger end of the spectrum. Tops ballet, new ballet, beginners modern, maybe up to about 10 years, 9 to 10. I wouldn't say, oh, I'm starting a jazz class for 13-year-olds. Because if you're going to attract a jazz class for a 13-year-old, you're going to attract a kid from either another dance school who's not going to be growing up with the values you want your dance school to begin with, or you're going to find them going to both and beginning to find a clash of interest. So I would only be advertising for complete beginners. I know that very much limits, but then I know that in 3 years' time, those 7-year-olds that started with me will be 10. And then I'll have a new bunch of 3-year-olds and like that. So I build my school from the start rather than That's my business one.
That is a lovely answer. And I know a lot of people will be sitting there listening to that going, interesting. Because yeah. I think there is a pressure to try and add as many classes as possible to just try and attract as many different new people of all different ages to try and get started. But actually what you're saying, I do feel makes a lot of sense.
I think if you want to be a dance teacher and only a dance teacher, then yeah, open as many classes as you want. But if you want to create a dance studio that has a long longevity and has respect and all of that, you want to start from the beginning with classes. And, you know, you can, you know, I see it happening with some, and then, well, I can't think where I was. Oh, there's a school I went to years ago and they'd only just opened and they were literally all 7 and 8. Now they're all 16 and they're amazing. Because that teacher has literally had them since they were babies. Yeah, okay, maybe an 8-year-old coming to you might have been somewhere else, but they're still young enough to instill the values you want in your studio in them. So that would be my teaching, my business way. The teaching one, if I was to avoid anything, I would avoid teaching it all myself. Because if you want your kids to be good at ballet, there's no point employing someone who's good at teaching tap. If you want your kids to be good at acro, there's no point employing me. And I know that it's one of those things that, I mean, I have my acrobatic arts qualification. That was one other thing I'd avoid tomorrow, actually, to say acro, because I hate acro. That's pointless. Absolutely pointless. Are you trying to break their back, or are you trying to make them strong?
Oh, I'm not a fan of acro. Interesting. Okay.
I like gymnastics.
Okay.
I like my kids tumble, but my kids do not bend. Well, they bend, but they don't bend in half. They're not contortionists.
Right, okay, interesting.
So they can round off flick, and they can back tuck, and they can aerial, and they can front aerial, all that, but they don't needle, and they don't chin-stand.
Okay, that's
just because it's just, I know, I kind of bypass that, but I don't know, I think if you're creating dancers, you want dancers who are strong and flexible and can move between positions. For me, acro is contortion, and it's, if you see a contortionist, they hit the position and hold. And yeah, okay, there's a niche for it, but I don't think it's helping dance. So I'm not a fan of acro, no offense to all these acro schools and all the acrobatic training, because I did it and I think it's great, but it's not something I wouldn't be adding acrobatics. I'd add gymnastics instead.
Again, it's just that whole thing, isn't it, that we everybody's like business model is going to be so different to the person next to them.
And oh yeah, absolutely.
If you love, they might think, oh no, I don't like that, and things that they
people
love.
People are always shocked when I say that, though, because they look at my students on my Instagram and they're like, they don't do acro. I'm like, no, they don't do acro. They do gymnastics and they do strength and they do stretch, but they don't do like acro on its own. But yeah, sorry, back to
not the
moaning about acro. And I know everyone's like, oh. I see why kids love it, and I think if you're really good at it, then it's really good. But if you're not, I see more and more injuries and more imbalances because, you know, I've got my needle. Can you do the other leg? Oh, no, I can't even lean that way. And you just think that's not good or healthy for the kid's spine. That's how I look at that. But, yeah, I would try not to teach everything. And I know if you're a new school, your overheads are going to be crazy. But if you know that you're good at teaching ballet and contemporary and modern and tap's not your thing, hire someone to teach the tap. Because, I mean, if I was going to a restaurant, I wouldn't expect the same person to be working in a Japanese restaurant as working in an Italian restaurant, is it? Or you go to Wetherspoons. You know, do you know what I mean? It's like you go somewhere that cooks all of it and it's mediocre at best, or you go to a specialist. So that would be my teaching.
And I think
which is hard when you're new.
It is. Because when you're first starting out, you know, you are wearing so many hats, aren't you? From all the way through to the accountant and everything in between. And I think people that are listening to this are probably thinking, oh god, but I'm not ready to hire a new member of staff. And I think it's important to note that that's fine, but you will
wait until you can.
And if you start
with your little ones, they don't need to do all those different stuff. You don't need to do hip hop when you're 7. Start them with ballet and start them with modern, all the things you can do. And then once your school has grown and grown and grown, then you can be like, oh, we're bringing a hip hop teacher in. That's fine. I also think, as you said, the hats of cleaner and accountant and things like that. Sometimes I think it's best to invest in the thing you don't really feel like you need, like an accountant. Like, I would recommend, like, getting an accountant. That means you can't get brand new branded uniform and merchandise, cool, get an accountant. Yeah, I think sometimes we jump on the things that look flashy and forget those sort of, because I know that some of my students are making their own businesses now and they're like, they graduated, etc., and I'm like, you need an accountant. They're like, but I don't. I'm like, you need an accountant and you need public liability insurance. But no, get those two and then you're sorted and then you're never going to be stuck. Yeah, okay, you have to pay £120 for your accountant, but hopefully he'll help you balance. This is a podcast, Rosina. Stop doing the actions. You're listening to me. I'm giving it full interpretive movement in my office.
You can't help with that, can you?
No.
It's interesting. We were having this exact conversation last night in, I've got a mentoring group that I'm working with at the moment. And in their session last night, I was saying, you know, when it gets to the point that you can delegate. Do not be afraid of delegation and don't feel like, you know, the fear of someone else coming and working for you, because when you start out and it's your baby and you've put so much into it and then suddenly it's the thought process of having someone else come in, will they match my brand, will they match my energy? And you know, as long as you've got a good hiring plan in place, you will find someone that is right for your brand and then bring them in.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that trust issue of letting someone, like, I know that my mum's school, she won't let anyone do the admin. I really need someone to do that admin, because, you know, whatever time it goes wrong, I'm like, oh my god, I need to sort it out, and I'm wherever I am in the world trying to sort it out. But it is that trust, and it is that worrying that they're not going to. But I think if you, as you say, hire someone that you know fits your brand, and this is another thing about building your school from scratch, you build it from scratch, you will get a student at some point who will want to teach. They don't all want to teach. Some of them, they all want to go on a cruise or they want to be in the West End. But there's always one or two of them that want to teach. You train them well enough when they're little, there's your teacher.
Absolutely. Exactly what I said last night. You're building
back. Okay, that's a period of, what, 12 years?
Yes.
But there's your teacher. And I've got to that point now where some of my students are leaving uni. And, you know, some of them even now, I'm like, that's who in 10 years' time I'd be like, hey, did you want to come back? because I know they believe in what we're trying to sell. And like, you know, people are like, oh, you're going to do workshops for everyone. I'm like, well, no, probably not. I'm not going to, you know, I mean, I'd love to. And it's my favorite. It is great to meet so many people. And I love that part of my job, but it doesn't always fit with family life, etc. But I know that if I said, sorry, I can't go, but Rory's going to come, they'd get the exact same experience. And the same with maybe one of my students who's 12, someone like Kira or Alyssa. I know that if when they're 18, they'll be able to go and do the same. So I think, yeah, trusting and delegating is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a really important thing to say.
Or automating.
Yes.
If you can't delegate, automate.
Yes.
If you don't know what automate is, read a book about it, because it'll make your life, it makes your life so much easier. Dance smarter, work smarter, live better.
Absolutely. Ooh,
I think that's Sam's, actually. I think that's
him. You might have just nicked that. But that's
I'm just married to him. What's his is mine, what's mine is his.
Absolutely.
Except our surnames.
So we've got some international listeners in this podcast, and I'm interested to know how you found the way that a dance school is structured in another country differs from the UK. You know, what do you think that the UK is lacking? And we sort of touched on this a little bit already, but you have been around the world and you have obviously spent a lot of time in the States. So I'm interested in the structure here of the school, you know, how
it is tough. Europe is very different to the UK. And Australia and America are also exceedingly different to Europe. For me, Europe, whenever I teach at a studio in Europe, they're very, very focused. I feel like, I don't know if it's a European way of training or children or anything like that, but if they go to a dance class, they're going to dance class because that is what they do. That is what their mum has invested in, and that's what they're going to work hard on. Whether they're good or bad doesn't matter, but they are working hard because that's where the money's been invested. And I don't know if that's because some of the countries I go to are poorer and their parents are like, well, if you're going to do ballet and it's going to cost me all this, you are going to work hard. And I do come across European children here, and sometimes I find that their parents are stricter. Like, you say to, hi, I'm really sorry, but little Jenny's not, she's not really improving. She needs to practice at home. A British parent may turn around to you and say, well, it's your fault because you're not teaching them correctly. The European parent goes, okay, thank you, I'll work with them. And I found that sometimes I think that's a, I don't know, it's a culture thing. It's definitely a culture thing. With Australia, they just train younger, harder and quicker. And in America, they don't do grades. Like, this is this syllabus thing. They don't waste their time doing that. Kids come for 3 hours a night and they train. And I think the training is definitely about training, and they come on a Tuesday, say at 4 o'clock, to do stretch followed by modern followed by they don't do modern, let's scrap that, stretch followed by jazz followed by contemporary. All of those things realistically fit under the same umbrella. I find here kids go on a Tuesday, they do ballet, then they change to tap, then they do their singing, then they finish with acro. There isn't that like bulk learning, and obviously in America convention is a huge thing, and they can take class from the best choreographers in the world. Like Travis Wall will be at convention. Those kids can learn from the best dancers in the country, the best teachers in the world, rather than just learning from their home studios. I think they're much more. International is. We're getting there.
We are getting there.
It's evening up. Yeah.
The positives of social media is that it's pushed the country to work harder and up their game.
Absolutely. And everyone's like, oh, I bet they're not all like that. But yeah, they are. Like, we take some of our students to the IDO World Championships for contemporary, okay. A bit like the tap, which Tap Attack do. And the standard is insane.
Right.
It is like, it sounds awful, but you prep your kids to go, you know, where are we going here? Because this is going to be an experience.
Right.
And if you've ever seen any of my students, they are pretty good. Like, they are amazing. And yeah.
They help. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate that feedback. That's interesting. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about mindset, because you've watched your mum over the years growing such a successful school. Obviously, we've had her on the podcast already. She's an absolute ledge. And you've worked with so many different school owners. What have you noticed seem to be like the common worries and anxieties for the dance school owner? Because obviously everyone that's listening is probably very near the beginning of their journey or in their first couple of years, and they would have already experienced some form of anxiety about
Can
you make them feel better and say, you know, this is what everyone's feeling?
Everyone feels it. Like, absolutely. You know, every dance school owner does. And I think the biggest anxiety, I think, from everyone is money. How much their dance studio is making. Often because it's based upon, I'm going to open a dance studio, and a family member goes, well, there's no money in that. Or other people go, well, Shani ended up opening a dance studio because her husband's rich. That's another one. We hear, oh, he pays the bills. It doesn't matter about the dance studio. It's just little Jenny's tap school down the road in the village hall. And I think you hear a lot about that. So it's all about, was that money, worry about money. And the only way you can run your dance school and make money, not big amounts, because that's not what it's about, but to make money is you have to have a business strategy, and you need to know how you're running your business. It's a business. It's not a hobby. And I think that when I do my teacher's courses, we have a seminar, not from me, about running it as a business. You have to run your passion as a business, and then your business will become your passion. Like, you can't just go at it and hope that passion will override everything. Business strategy and money is definitely a big anxiety. And the other one is always keeping up with the school down the road. It's hard because people always go, oh, you copied, or she's copying. You can't always be original. There's only so many ways you can brand a baby ballet class. And even if, like, not even the franchise, just ballet for 2 to 4 year olds. There's only so many ways you can brand it. Like, it's ballet, for God's sake. You have to be authentic to what you want. Yeah. You can't always be original. So I think sometimes seeing what other people are doing, you begin to worry that you're copying, or you begin to worry they think you're going to copy. I just think just unfollow it all. Ignorance is bliss.
It's something that I talk about a lot is, you know, yes, it is a completely already saturated market. So like you say, there's only so many ways that you can spell it out. But ultimately, you wasting time comparing yourself to, you know, the school in the next village is just completely pointless, because it's all it is just negative mindset, which sends you in a spiral, and then you start looking for things to worry about, you know?
I think you have to think, especially if you're starting a new school from young, you're going to attract the kids that realistically live around the dance studio. Their moms want to pick them up from school and drop them to ballet. They don't want to drive them 45 minutes. Maybe they do when they're 13 and they're training hard. When they're 5 and 6, they just want convenience and efficient and good quality. So you shouldn't be worrying about what's going on in the next school, next town, because the next town is attracting those primary schools. And that's again why, again, I'm talking about my mum's school, sorry. It's the only way I can, like, we don't take dancers over the age of 12. Like, we only... new enrollments are younger, and this is about what I said earlier, like always growing them up, because you find that, you know, some parents will follow the grass is greener, and you don't want them in your school. So that anxiety of going, oh, am I offering enough to attract, you don't want to do that. You just want to follow what you want, and then you'll attract what you want. You want to attract the client. I think I wrote that down. Where did I write this? Oh, here it is. Know your market and your perfect client and attract that, rather than attracting every client. Because I'm not gonna go to Cafe Nero. I'm allergic to lactose. I'm gonna go to the vegan store. Mm-hmm. They're attracting me because that suits me. Whereas I think dance studios think they can just attract everyone, and it's not like that.
Yeah, I agree. The teachers that are currently in my group, my mentoring group that I'm doing separately, they're working on creating a profile for who their ideal client is, because business, so knowing who your ideal customer is literally the number one thing, because it helps with so many other things. It's going to help with your marketing process. It's going to help with your buzzwords, your advertising words, you know. Start brainstorming these sorts of things, and you know who you
people don't think of that, though. It's because the old school mindset is a dance school or being a dance teacher isn't a business. And then I think a lot of the old school studios struggle with the new marketing, and some of the brand new ones go full whack with the marketing and don't have the substance. So it's like finding that somewhere in the middle. Like, some places you're like, God, your marketing is insane. And then you get there and you're like, oh, where are the students? Oh, they're not here yet because it's brand new. Or the ones that you have got, you've gathered from another dance school because your marketing is so good. So I think you need to balance substance and marketing out. But yeah, people don't look at it as a business. And then, I think your perfect client is the answer. Like, maybe your perfect client, maybe you want 20 perfect clients who come and do modern and tap and ballet and jazz and singing, and they do the whole week, and they're your kids, they're there every night. Maybe that's your demograph. Or you might have, oh, you know what, I'm going to have 20 baby ballet classes a week, and I just want a constant turnover of 2 to 4 year olds. Your face when I said constant baby ballet. It's a no from you. It's a no from me too.
No. I've got a 4-year-old at home, so I have a constant stream of baby ballet in my life.
Oh, yeah, you don't need any extra. No.
Your business model has got to be what your passion is. Otherwise, that business model will never grow because you're not completely committed to what it is.
You only have to look at Diddy Dance, the Diddy Dance franchise. I taught for Diddy Dance when I first graduated, and I can't stand toddlers. Like, I hate it. I did not get anywhere. I hate every minute of it. She's doing super amazing. She loves it. That's her thing. Rory loves teaching the minis. I do not. It's just, you have to search for what it is you want. And I think when you first start your dance school, you're trying to offer everything, because the dance school down the road is offering everything, but they're 15 years in or 4 years in. You have to watch it grow slowly.
They're a completely different part of their journey, and you've got to remember that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
People listening to me, if you don't follow me already, I'm very honest.
Yeah, but that's what I want.
You may or may not get me into trouble, but you know.
That's why I wanted you on here, because not everyone will agree with everything you say, and that's okay, but a lot of people will agree with it. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, we're sort of talking about this, so this kind of works quite nicely to move on to asking, what is your advice to the new school owner who is struggling with the comparison trap?
Unfollow everything that's making you feel crap.
I feel like you've got experience.
Can I say that? I have experience in unfollowing people that make me feel like crap. Yes! Oh my God! I've been doing it, I must have read it in a book somewhere, and it was like, why are you following... It might even be, I'm trying to think of what book. I don't know, but even when you see teenagers struggling with body image, people say, well, stop unfollowing the ones that make you feel bad. And you think, oh, okay, well, if that works for a teenager, then it could work for me. And I don't really have businesses that make me feel bad, but I do get businesses that make me think, oh, shit, am I meant to be doing that? Am I meant to be doing this? So I just unfollow. And what you need to do is make sure that the people around you are also not following it, because it got to a point where Sam or Rory would be like, oh my God, are you seeing what blah blah's doing? Not in a negative, like, oh, look what they're doing. And I was like, no, I haven't seen it, and I don't care. Like, I'm going down my path. So yeah, I think that's my best plan with people that are worrying about comparison. Plus, if you're beginning to compare, you've got a question if the thing you're doing is the thing you want to be doing. Success only comes when you're doing something that you want to be doing. If you're doing it because your mom said you had to, or you're doing it because your dance teacher said you'd be a really good dance teacher, but actually deep down you want to be something else, then your success is never going to come.
Absolutely. Your definition of success is going to be very different to the person next to you.
Oh my God, yeah. You have to, you're only going to be successful if you're happy. That's
One of the exercises that I do with my clients, and also is, I think, on the first episode of this podcast, is important versus not important. And I make them write down, you know, what is important to you in this business that you're creating. And then I say, right now, I want to know everything that's not important to you. And people are like, why am I wasting time writing down what's important? I said, because it's the last time you're going to waste time writing it down. Once you know that it's not important to you anymore, you don't need to look at it. You don't need to follow it.
I do the same. Yeah, I do the same when I mentor, because I mentor 14 to 18 year olds. They're all mainly ballet school kids. Bless their little hearts. I'm like, so why do you dance? And when they've eased up, sometimes it's, oh, because my mum danced or my sister did it. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, so do you love it? And they're like, well, no, not really. And I'm like, so why are you doing it? And they're like, well, no one's allowed me to ever say I'm not allowed to do it anymore. And I'm like, well, here I am telling you that the reason you're not happy and the reason you're not getting your flexibility back to where you want it is because deep down you don't want it. And it's okay not to want it. It's okay. You can do something else. And I think sometimes dance teachers get very caught up telling their really good students that they're going to be this and they're going to be that. And you have to make sure that those students know exactly what they want. And I think that's, I mean, having mentored them, I think knowing what it is you want and is important is so, so important.
I totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, I was the same.
You have to ask myself regularly because it changes.
Yeah.
It changes all the time. And what's important to you now might not be important to you in 5 years. You've got to ask the question.
Exactly. Yeah, is it going to matter in 5 years? Probably not. It's like how you get a teenager out having a meltdown. You ask them the same questions as realistically you need to ask yourself. Is this going to matter in 5 years' time that he dumped you? No. So it's not going to matter that the dance school down the road just started ballroom dancing in 5 years' time if you're focusing on your ballet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ballroom. Can't do ballroom. I wish you could.
No, it looks like why I don't either.
I think deciding ballroom is the one you cannot blag. You cannot blag it. Like, you're either good at it or you're not. No.
I watch Strictly and I think, wow, that is impressive.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Great, great show. Love that. Did a workshop with Karen Clifton on Zoom, actually. That was great. Yeah, the kids had a great time. Like, best dancers in the country in contemporary jazz. Can't flipping do rumba, can they? Like, absolute idiots. And I was like, look at you guys go. And you know what? They loved it because there was no pressure in being good at it. They just got to dance and have fun. And yeah, it was quite funny watching them try to move their hips. Yeah.
No, I think that's a really key point you put there, though. We need to remember that we've gone into this industry because we love it. And it needs to have fun with it. And I think once you become a business owner, there's so much pressure that suddenly you forget the fun aspect. So just like remind the children that, you know, you're here because you love it.
Yeah, you have to remind yourself.
Yeah, you've got to remind yourself. Which leads to my last question today, which is, if you ever struggle with insecurities, can you share some of your ways that you coach yourself through them?
Yeah, so obviously I've already talked about unfollowing people that annoy me. I barely follow anything. Like, just dogs and food. Like, one of my students was like, why don't you follow me? And I was like, because I'm fed up with seeing your selfies. Like, I need to see that. Anyway, my way of kind of looking at insecurities and what I'm worried about is going wrong or right, I use a thing called black box thinking. Only it might not work for everyone, but what you do is, so a plane has a black box, so that if it crashes and it goes wrong, so, a professional can look at the box and work out what went wrong and make it better. So if I'm beginning to get like, oh, this isn't going well enough, or it's not going, my business isn't running how I want it to do, I'm not getting enough workshops, or my kids aren't turning properly, or my, you know, everyone's looking at me at a competition because that kid fell off a pirouette or whatever, I look at the failures and then take the failures and work on the failures, rather than looking at, you can absolutely adore everything that's going right, but until you start looking at your failures, you don't elevate.
Okay. And is that actually something you've done for a while?
I've done it since I read the book, Black Box.
Right, okay.
Matthew Syed, he's amazing. I read it just before lockdown. Okay. Obviously, I have my Rosina Andrews Remote, which is an online training platform, which actually existed pre-lockdown. Like, it was something me and Tia Laukonen, I don't know if you know her, she's a photographer. Talked about, like, 2 years ago, October, and we were like, well, she was like, I was like, my business is stagnant. And she was like, yeah, maybe do an online training program. And I was like, you know what, that'd be good. Started doing all these classes, then lockdown happened, and obviously it elevated crazy. It was needed. People are like, how did you know? I was like, don't know, like, I'm a witch. It was exactly what that business needed. But then other people started doing it, which is inevitable. We're learning online. Here's on-demand classes. Why would I be the only one? Why would I even think I was allowed to be the only one? Like, you have to realize that everyone has same passions. But then I think it's actually, I wonder if it's written down here. Business fails.
Oh.
So guys at home who are like, what the hell is she talking about? I'm holding up a sheet of paper with a spider diagram that in the middle of it says business fails. So the product promotion, for example. I assume everyone knows who I am. Not in a like big-headed way, but you just assume that everyone knows I teach pirouette surgery. But there's loads of kids who have no idea what pirouette surgery is. So I've thought to myself, I'm really going to have to up my promotion of pirouette surgery. And you might notice that there's more reels coming out and there's more promotion of pirouette surgery, which is something I haven't promoted in years because I did it and that's what I did. So I take my fails and start working on them. It also gives you something to do.
Yeah.
Because if you're always looking at what's going well, if you say you've got a new school, oh my God, six-year-old's drama is going so well. And then you look at the side and you realize the singing class only got two kids in it, but you're like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to focus on the drama. The drama's going great and singing keeps failing. You think, okay, how am I going to get kids from drama to singing? Ooh, offer a bundle. Ooh, offer this. Ooh, offer. And you have to look at where it's going wrong.
Yeah.
Some people are like, that's a well pessimistic way of looking at life. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. Like, I'm looking at what everything went wrong and trying to make it better, but then I'm making my business better and making it better.
No, I think there's real value in that. And I might actually have a look at that book myself.
Honestly, highly recommend it. He has another book called Bounce as well.
Okay.
Great. I'll pop them over to you and you can put them on the bottom of this podcast if people want to listen.
Yes.
I love reading, and I read the most random books, and I think sometimes that is where I get my crazy ideas from, because you can read a book about, so Nike, Shoe Dog, the founder of Nike, that book's amazing. And no, I can't relate to a multi-billion dollar company that sells trainers, but there are little bits that you're like, I can put that into this. So that's how I coach myself out of insecurities. I'm not very good at journaling or meditating or anything like that. Sadly, my mind's like, because I write so much for like life. Like I write for blogs, I write for like content. I write that. I just journaling is just like, I don't want to write again.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, okay, let's find out all the things that you do, because I think there might be some people listening who maybe aren't aware. Why don't you share with us now of all the ways that people can get in touch with you and what you're offering at the moment.
Best way to find everything out about me is on my website, rosinaandrews.co.uk. I teach workshops in studios, so private workshops. I head to your studio. I've been doing that now 10 years. Someone once said to me, I think about 9 years ago, oh, you won't be doing that forever, but I really love it, so I will do it as long as there is bookings. So I can travel to your studio, teach your studios, and that's actually how I met Laura, went to her beautiful studios. I have my books, Pirouette Surgery and Leap Surgery, of which there is a third one coming out, which is all about, it's called Dance Smarter with Rosina. It's all about all the other bits other than pirouettes and leaps, because I am more about other bits than pirouettes and leaps. I have my online training program, Rosina Andrews Remote, which is all on-demand classes. It also has a teacher's pack where you can, as teachers, you can get on there and you can get inspiration for your classes. You can share the classes. During lockdown on Zoom, those classes were being shared out when you guys were ready to, like, I don't want to teach ever again. Totally know how you feel. I also used Rosina Andrews Remote for some of my classes in lockdown. So I think that's about it. I also have a free newsletter, which goes out every week, which you guys can listen to my crazy ranting without having to pay a penny, because I totally get that dance studios are not multi-billion pound industries, sadly. I think it's an amazing industry, and if you believe in what you're going to do and are happy, then your success will follow you. Dance teachers are nice people. I like them.
We are a nice
97% of them mean well.
I think that's a great place to end today.
I think 97% is me being exceedingly generous. I'm joking. Guys, I'm joking. I really am.
I've actually loved having you on today, and I hope it's made a few people chuckle as well. I'm sure there's been some really funny moments in this. I can't wait to listen to it back.
I never listen to them back, so I always think, oh my god, did you really say that?
I love your honesty, and there was some real great value in there, and I'm sure our listeners really enjoyed. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Good luck with your dance schools, everyone.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's podcast. I hope you found that useful and took away some valuable information. If you're enjoying this podcast, I would love it if you could like and subscribe. And if you're listening on iTunes, perhaps even leave me a little review or share it with someone else who you think it may benefit. If you're just starting out or in the first 2 years of your dance school business, follow the link in the show notes to join us at the Facebook group.